The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Thursday. Gary, good morning.
Good morning. We've got so much to talk about here. The U.S. grounds, the 737 MAX jets. We'll get to that. Skater Bob to officially announce that he's running for president today. Did you see the Vanity Fair article? Oh, my. I mean, it's just I was meant to do this. This was always, it's like, shut up.
I
was
Skater Bob.
I was born to be in it.
I was born to be in it. I mean, it's just, as somebody said, it's a perfect magazine to lead off his candidacy because vanity is the key word.
And liberals always say fair, so yeah. It's not fair. Were you born to lose your home state?
Well, it's I think one of the, I saw this on social media yesterday. I can't remember who wrote it, but it's like, yes, the media treats all candidates fairly. Could you imagine a Republican who lost his Senate bid, who was a ex-congressman who decided to run? Would anybody in the media give that Republican a write-up like they're giving Skater Bob?
Right.
No.
I was born to, well, imagine, you know, a high profile Republican that loses a Senate bid and then decides to run for president. See, Mitt Romney did it the other way. He lost his presidential bid and decided to run for Senate. Now, he won the second one. And he had won elections before that, Beto as well, but it's different when we talk about a district and the bid. And remember, the whole thing in Texas taken on Ted Cruz, as is the case with a number of these races. You had Hollywood money, celebrity money, liberal money, Democrat money coming from out of the state. That couldn't even get it done.
No. So this is going to be, it's going to be a joy over the next couple of days to comment, to be able to comment on how the media covers O'Rourke. Manafort gets 7.5 years total in jail. That coming up. College cheating, the college cheating ringleader says he helped more than 750 families with admissions over that period, I guess, what was it, between 2011 and February.
Right.
So roughly 750 families here. You know, a lot of people have said, well, you know, universities begin with their admissions programs, their legacy and all that. It's always been unfair. Doesn't matter whether it's unfair. It's whether it breaks the law.
Right. Yeah, you heard a lot of pushback. Well, you know, you've got high profile celebrities and people walking in and shaking the hands with the heads of any of these colleges. And they give them a smile and a handshake and that gets their kid in. Did they break the law?
They break the law.
There's a lot in this whole little circus of ours that's unfair. I understand the comparison between, his kid didn't score as high on the SAT as the child of a single mom who was, you know, working three jobs.
Right.
I get that.
I did see that. Somebody, you were reading the same thing. Yeah. Somebody posted that yesterday.
Yeah. When you talk about doing something illegal, in the case of the allegations against Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman, according to the charges against her, there of the affidavit, it said that her SAT scores, her daughter's SAT scores in that case, were roughly higher by 400 points than the pre-SAT. In other words, with the cheating,
right.
The alleged cheating here, that got her 400 points. Here's a question. Should she have to take the SAT again? If she didn't earn it. what do you do with the students?
Well, I'm sure those scores will be invalidated because there was fraud.
They have to be.
They have to be, yeah.
Cheating.
All right. So we understand the system is unfair, and we understand that private colleges especially, and even public colleges, the way that they do their admissions, who knows how they do it? And could they give preference that some people would view as not being fair? Absolutely. But it's not fair. It's not about fairness. It's about, did you break the law or did you not break the law? That's what this is about. And I saw so many people. And again, this is the society that we live in. And you and I have talked about this before, how a topic will be out there and people wish to discuss everything but the actual topic at hand.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Everybody wants their own spin on it. It's like, fine, you can do that. But in this case, it's about don't justify it in their case because they broke the law.
Right. And the whole idea, nobody cares about the celebrities. I don't know that anybody is making the point. This is about the celebrities. It's about breaking the law.
Well, it's like you can sit there and say, you can say, I believe that drugs should be legalized, and so the person who, you know, why should the person who was transporting 50 bales of pot in a van, why should they be arrested when you had a huge truck carrying beer across and hard liquor across the nation because they're both drugs? Because one's against the law.
Right.
You may not like that, but the law is the law. There's a heck of a lot of laws I don't like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole speed limit thing. We got to work on that.
Not really. We live in Texas. So one thing I do like about Texas, the speed limit is so high, I never feel like I have to speed.
Yeah.
When it's 85.
Well, I live inside of one school zone and adjacent to another.
Oh, okay, during the school zones, yeah. Yes. The school zones, yeah.
I can't even idle. I mean, I can't even just idle through it. My truck actually goes faster than 20.
Oh, by the way, driving home yesterday, mm-hmm. I picked a great route to drive home. I said, I'm going to take the tollway, which is right adjacent to the airport, where they had close to the 80-mile-an-hour winds right when I was driving home. If I would have waited 15 minutes, I would have missed it.
Now, there was an overturned big rig, which would have been on your way home.
Yes.
I saw a picture of it.
Yeah. Oh, it was a mess. By the time I got down there, they had the whole road closed off, and then I tried to go on the side roads, and I didn't know where I was going because there were so many road barriers that were blown out, I wasn't sure where I could drive.
Mm.
I mean, it was... But the wind had stopped by that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, big rig was blown, you know, right over. And I saw it. I was on the service road
around our area.
Yeah, I was able to see it. Yeah. But they, you know, near where I was driving home initially, was at one of the Amazon warehouses near the airport. The roof blew out. You see those townhouses?
Yeah.
That went down like dominoes. Mm. This wasn't a tornado. It was. And I know the experience of the Midwest, they had some 100-mile-an-hour straight winds.
Right.
Other places in the Midwest, we had 80 miles an hour, and the wind that would hit. And I just thought about it when you're talking about the speed limit, because it was 70 on this road, and I think I was going about 25, because you couldn't see in front of you at all. It was monsoon rain, and, you know.
I was driving about
close
the same
to 80 time. Close to 80-mile-an-hour winds.
Yeah. I was driving about the same time, and my wipers went out. They just stopped moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do anything. I had to, because I was closer to my destination than I was home. I didn't have any choice. Got off on a side road, stayed on the side road. Thank you, Rain-X. I Rain-X'd my windshield about 3.5 weeks ago.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So are they working now? Are they out completely?
No, they're out completely.
Wow.
Yeah, the motor is out. I know how to fix it, but I'm going to let somebody else do it. I just don't have the time.
Yeah, it was showing. I've got the variable speed, the sensors, and the sensors couldn't figure out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be slow at times, and they'd speed up, and they'd slow down. Mm-hmm. There was so much rain that was hitting my windshield. And as I'm just 5 minutes from work. But by that time, I'm on the tollway, and I'm thinking to myself, what am I doing?
Mm.
We saw it coming before we left here.
Yeah,
we actually saw it. We saw it, but I didn't think it was going to be as powerful as it was until I got in my car, and it was, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so the speed limit was very slow. It took me took me about an hour to get home, where normally it takes me about 27 minutes.
Yeah.
Because it was just, but even in the Midwest, they got hit harder with some of those straight line winds.
Right, right, yeah.
Also coming up here on the show, Lisa Page's testimony released. We talked about that just a little bit yesterday, but what else is out there and where does this lead us?
Well,
It was pretty. You and I talked about it. And we said the media really didn't cover it. They covered it more yesterday, especially the conservative media.
I think they were going through it kind of like you and I do. When you go through hundreds of pages, you know, you're looking for certain things, and you have to. I guess I almost have to hear the voices in my head. In the case of like a Trey Gowdy asking a question, I try and picture Trey Gowdy asking that question as I'm reading a transcript. But a couple of things that one of the things that we talked about yesterday is the whole thing about the former AG Loretta Lynch and whether or not the order was sent to the FBI by the AG or someone at the Justice Department, essentially to stand down, to not pursue anything, and that they weren't going to pursue anything. And from that, did they tell Comey? Did they instruct Comey to give that speech or make that statement rather? On July 5th of 2016. And then the other thing, too, in that she confirmed essentially the whole insurance policy thing in the text messages with Peter Strzok. And she said they had very little evidence to go on with the whole Russia thing. And they didn't feel rushed at first because nobody believed, and I'm paraphrasing, but none of them believed that Trump was going to win. But they had to build that contingency in the event that he did win. They had to ramp things up significantly, and that's exactly what happened. We saw it. And
well, and then the other point is that was brought up yesterday, because you and I brought it up. We said it, as we were analyzing it, sort of on the air,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because new thoughts kept coming up. And one of the questions we said is, "Whoa, did Comey lie?" And that seemed to be a narrative from quite a few people yesterday.
Right?
Did Comey lie?
Right.
Because when he went out there in July 5th, and then afterwards. Mm-hmm. He was told, I made the decision myself. Well, Lisa Page is saying that decision was made early on by the Department of Justice, and it was several times that the FBI went to the Department of Justice saying, they went and said, we wish to prosecute.
Right.
We think we've got a case to prosecute for Hillary, breaking the law, the Espionage Act, because of gross negligence. And we know how that was initially in the report and then taken out eventually.
Right.
As we know, and changed. But they were using it. And it was sort of framed at that time. Well, it was just the preliminary thing, but it went no further. Well, it did go further. They were arguing that. The FBI was arguing that to the Department of Justice. And the Department of Justice was saying, no way. Not once, but as Lisa Page said several times, did you notice nobody came out yesterday and said her testimony was wrong?
You know, that's another thing, too. I wondered if there would be somebody coming out and countering, because what would be her motivation for lying in
right.
that case?
Did Comey come out and say?
I didn't see anything there.
I didn't see her.
And the difference would be, like, if we're talking about, because we threw around the whole idea that Attorney General Lynch said that she would leave it up to, you know, their recommendations in terms of, you know, moving right. forward on the case. And she had recused herself, but she could have lied in that case. Except Comey was under oath. Comey was testifying when he was answering those questions about that. If he's on a book tour and he lies, you know, he lies, and we believe that's wrong. But there are penalties for lying to Congress. And I would have to go back over the testimony, but I believe he said that at least once and possibly more than once.
Well,
that was his decision, that no one told him.
Was Lynch ever under oath?
I don't know that she was. She said that specifically.
Well, no, but was she ever under oath in closed session? Because I'm sure that question came up.
Yeah,
I'll have to check that out.
That I don't know.
Right,
yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
And I don't know if that specific question was asked. Certainly it would be. I mean, if Trey Gowdy is sitting in front of her, there's no way that question is going to go unasked.
But, I mean, that changes everything. I mean, it was a huge day yesterday when that testimony came out,
mm-hmm.
or 2 days ago when that testimony came out from the Republicans. We'll get to that and more. Plus, we'll tell you about the New York judge that rules against the anti-vaccine parents and says students can't return to school during the measles outbreak, and the Gambino family crime boss murdered last night.
Wow.
In front of his house. We'll get to that and more all coming up. Plus, your calls and comments. A great show coming up. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. You want an example of media bias? You and I just talking about it. When you look at the United States' decision to ground the 737 MAX,
right?
And I'm reading here from Politico the headline: "America Last: How Trump Followed the World in Grounding Boeing's Planes." The Trump administration stood firm behind Boeing and its troubled 737 MAX until it didn't. And you and I have gone through the different headlines, whether it's Politico, whether it's the Hill.com, mm-hmm. and a number of different other media outlets out there that are attempting to make the case that the administration just arbitrarily, you know, didn't want to ground the planes, and then arbitrarily, just because, okay, the pressure from the other countries, decided to do so, and that's leading from behind.
And its association with Boeing and all
right.
of this.
And what we found out was, well, no. The new information came out, as the acting FAA chief said, and, you know, and it's... By the way, it's absolutely clear why they made the decision to do it. It's because the new data that came in from Aireon LLC, the company that provides air traffic surveillance through a global network of satellite supply details about all airliners that are flying around the world. And they can do it in less than 8-second increments, and they can recreate what happened in the flight. And after those were released Wednesday morning, after everybody got that on Wednesday morning, after the FAA got it, that's when they came to the decision, because they found similarities at that point. They had the data to back it up, and that's when they decided at that point to do it. It wasn't because of the pressure of other countries. It wasn't Trump leading from behind. It was the fact that they were waiting for the data in order to make that decision,
yeah.
which had been talked about before, that if we can find the FAA and the NTSB, or the FAA, not the NTSB, but if we can, but the NTSB was working with them
right.
and with Aireon and everything else to put this all together. And as soon as they got the data that said there are similarities, boom, they said time to ground it.
Right.
It wasn't because of pressure. It wasn't Trump feeling the pressure or America leading from behind.
Then Trump didn't make the call
right.
to not ground the planes earlier. That wasn't on Trump. The FAA had said all along, we're not going to do this without some data, something behind it. They received that data as well as the along with the Canadians, and said, okay, now there's some similarities, and this justifies us at least looking into this further. It's that simple, but the entire liberal media group as a whole was out to make it look like stupid Trump doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Intense low pressure areas look like a comma on the surface map. The dark part of the comma, the center of the low, the curved part, a frontal boundary. And that's what we have in the center of the country. This is the storm system that's been producing so much snow in the west and heavy rain in the south. The warm, moist air and associated frontal boundary will be affecting a good portion of real estate today, including I-55, I-65 north and south. Rain pretty much from Louisiana all the way to Chicago. And by tomorrow, we'll see the system up and down the I-95 corridor from Maine to Florida. Snow continues today for North and South Dakota and Western Nebraska. Early tomorrow morning at about this time, look for the potential for mixed precip along I-35 from Des Moines to Duluth and portions of I-94 in Minnesota and Wisconsin. With a week to go until spring, there's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
they didn't cheat on their SATs, but only because their parents were broke. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
I can't even remember what... I couldn't tell you what my SAT scores were. I have no idea. I can't remember.
Well, I took the SATs and I didn't go to college. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I couldn't get in. My parents were broke.
Well, Yale... I don't think there was an Ivy League school that was interested in me.
Some of the schools that I could have gotten in had Ivy in their lawn. However, technically speaking, they were not Ivy League.
I went to a junior college my first 2 years for engineering.
Right.
And every time I go back to see my parents, it's right near the airport. I drive by it every time.
Right.
And you can see the room where the college radio station is, and the college radio station and TV station. You can, they've got a bunch of antennas above it, and it's still there. And every time we drive by it, if I'm with my dad, he said, see, there's where it all started, right there.
Right. What's interesting is that the university there in the town where I graduated high school was a university where actually Dr. Phil started his college years. And that would have been the main university. I would have gone to the junior college in our area was and still is a great nursing school. But everybody in the area knew it as a nursing school, so I didn't think of it for anything else. I thought, well, no, I don't want to go there because I don't have any interest in being a nurse, right? So I got into radio the summer after I graduated high school. I kept going to work. They kept asking me to work more, and I worked more and more, and I just never went to college. Didn't feel the need to spend that money on that education at that time, and glad I didn't.
And when I was at junior college, I started playing in the fall intramural league, and they asked me to try out for the basketball team.
Oh.
Now, at that point, I think I had grown maybe to 5'4" or 5'5".
Wow.
But I had a great shot.
Yeah.
See, the problem was I was born in the wrong time. I was born before the three-point line.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about that.
Oh, yeah. See, I picked up. Nobody else picked it up, but I picked it up in Forrest Gump.
Oh, yeah.
Remember in Forrest Gump when he is released, when he's in the gymnasium and he's playing ping pong? That would have been it. And in the background is Tony Orlando and Dawn playing. And I believe it was a tie of yellow ribbon, but at the most it was 73, and they had a three-point line in the gym.
Oh.
I picked that up, that was not possible at that time because there was no three-point line back in 73. I don't think they fully embraced it. I know that I remember when I watched, it had to be 83, 84, 85 when it came to college basketball, because I believe 83 when North Carolina State won it with, Jim Valvano.
Mm-hmm.
They played it, sometimes they played the three-point line, but they didn't have it on in all the games. So I don't know. So it must have been maybe 84 where they started doing it full-time.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
If there would have been a three-point line, maybe I would have had a shot. But I remember thinking the same as you when it came to college, but that was like when they wanted me to try out for the basketball team, and I was already working, I don't know, probably 30, 40 hours a week then. Yeah, it was I don't think I have a career in basketball. I need to work.
Yeah,
and
right.
So that was taken away from me. I didn't get a chance. I didn't get free stuff.
I didn't have the opportunity.
So I didn't get free stuff, so I wasn't able to experience the athletics and the art and the music and the other things that I wished to do. Because I had to pay because of the billionaires. The billionaires ruined my college experience because the billionaires have it all and I didn't have it all.
Now, see, if I'd gone to school, I'd complain that I didn't get out of it what, you know, the billionaires' kids got out of it. Because they got to party, I had to spend my extra time.
Well, you know, that is another thing with this whole thing about diploma fetching, whatever you want to call it. That's the first word that came to my mind, too, that you get a piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
Has a piece of paper ever been more useless in the world today than a college degree that doesn't, that isn't specific to a job that really wants that type of knowledge?
I would say in the workplace, there's still consideration by employers that you did your time, that you stuck to it for 4 years, that you actually went and you graduated.
That you accomplished something.
Because, and I think it's possible, and the reason I say that is because I have family members and close friends in HR. And they're the ones that tell me, because
it's still important.
Because I would not know otherwise. And the reason that they look at that, and I believe it, I would love to just sit around with and actually, I have that opportunity very often, but the next time I do that, sitting around with them, I want to ask them about, all right, is that because younger people today, it really is about showing up. If you're young and you get a new job, be there every day, be on time. If they see the diploma, you know, you got that, well, that's an indication that they're going to show up most of the time. I know college is different, but you went and you finished it, right? You're going to finish the task.
Right. Right.
Now, that doesn't always apply, so you also have to apply yourself. You have to be there and you have to, you know, when they ask you to do something new, say yes. Can you do this? Yes. Are you willing to do this? Yes. And those are the things that will help to excel you. And then next thing you know, everybody else has left that job and you're still there and you become a senior employee. You work your way up. But I think that there probably is a case to be made in any HR department that they look at that for a young person that has a degree. And even if that other person, the other person doesn't have a degree, they'll look at it and say, yeah, but this one, let's say the degree doesn't apply to that job field. But you showed up, and there's a better chance you're going to show up every day. And I think really right now with this, because there is something very, very different about today's lifestyle with millennials and even some that are just older than the millennials. They want their time. Remember the two guys who go back years ago that wrote the book, you don't work to live. You don't live to work. You work to live.
You work to live, right.
And their point was, we're going to 8-to-5 it. And we don't care about anything else. For us, it's not about. And they didn't even really get into working smarter, not harder kind of thing. I think, you know, people are capable of doing that, but they don't always do that. And I think it's probably at this point now, you have many people where it's almost like the Ocasio-Cortez approach. I don't have to say things that are real. I'm saying something. I don't have to say anything that makes sense. I'm there. I'm showing up. I'm loud. I keep repeating things. Yeah, they don't make sense. When you've got a world that's created for them, this fantasy that's created out of nothing, doesn't have any basis whatsoever. For employers, it becomes something different. They do need those critical thinking skills. They want things to add up. 1 and 1 is 2, and you can't change that. Like you've said, you know, with engineering, with putting a car together, with doing things in real life tasks, those things have to be true. Those things have to work. You have to be right. But in today's world, you're trying to bring those two mentalities together. Doesn't matter what job you're doing, the job has to be right.
Well, and I'll repeat that again, because I really think that it's one of the most amazing things in a negative way, one of the most amazing things in our society. And if you didn't hear it, I was just happened to just go on a rant last week where I said I was coming into work and I was only 5 minutes from work. And I was just thinking about the vehicle that I was driving in and all the hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of parts that are in that vehicle that all had to be engineered and manufactured. And you have to get it right. And then I thought about the road that I was driving on, that everything had to be done right in making that road. And I was coming off an off-ramp, and then I looked, and there was the bridge right there of the interstate. And I went, and that bridge had to be engineered precisely. They had to get it right. And then I was looking at the buildings around there and thought, all the architects had to get, the architects and the civil engineers, they had to get everything right. And then I started thinking of the electrical systems that they put not only into my vehicle, but into these, into these buildings. Then I looked at the high wires that were near me, and I went, wow, somebody's got to make sure that the electricity goes, and they can't make a mistake there because somebody gets killed if they don't do it. Mm-hmm. And I thought about our entire society and the entire private sector that created all of this. It's the private sector that does that through competition and incentive. That's all done. And I thought about it. And then I thought about in the buildings, the electricians, the plumbers, everybody has to get it right. If you don't get it right, you're called back until you get it right. And there are no excuses. You've got to get it done. And all of a sudden, when it comes to the other part of society, the part of society that governs us, we will put in people into those positions that we obviously have no clue as to how anything runs.
Mm-hmm.
And then we idolize them as if they're something special. Wow, she's just something special. And these same people that have to get everything right in their job, or somebody could die or be injured because of it, all of a sudden lose any context of reality and can easily shift into a political idolatry mindset where this person can BS the hell out of me and I'm okay with it. And to me, I find that the most fascinating thing in our society. And that was just a thought that I had coming into work, and maybe I think too much.
Well, I'm wondering when activism becomes part of the workplace on a very, micro level. But think about it. If you believe that this is the way you get things done, right? That the Ocasio-Cortez approach or whatever it is the way to get things done, then what's to keep you from walking into your boss's office? By the way, I've heard of this actually happening before, but I mean, on a more regular basis, the stories of people walking into their boss's office saying, you can't do that. And then, because what did we hear her say? I'm the boss. This isn't about her. I'm just talking about the mentality.
Right.
That says, well,
she's not
this
the first.
Is how you, no.
She's not the first.
This is how you get things done. We know there's activist journalists, activist politicians. What about activist employees?
Well, no, we talked about CNN yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
What happened where these journalists all of a sudden forgot about the fact that they can be sued?
Right. They put that aside.
That's been a core tenet in journalism for the longest time. We got to get it right because we can get sued.
We can damage people.
We can damage people, and then we can damage our own company.
Right.
And what CNN, did, and the Washington Post and others, when it comes to Nicholas Sandman,
mm-hmm.
you sit there and you say, wait a minute, well, their delusional mindset that used to be a standard in journalism thrown out the window for their agenda, and the damage that they can cause, even management doesn't at times realize what can happen to them. They have lost a complete sense of reality. So it's already hit into the private sector, into the media. So why not evolve into everything else in the private sector?
The everyday workplace. And I'm not talking about objecting if clearly something wrong is being done, if there's illegal activity or if employees are being harmed. I'm talking about somebody believing, just like she said, I'm the boss.
Right.
And believing that it should be this way and I'm going to change it because my cause needs this result from your actions as a company leader or as a company altogether.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I was thinking, as we were talking about, you know, the diploma fetching. I don't know why I just came up with that term. Mm-hmm. But the whole celebrity college admission scam. I remember when my sister went for her first job out of college. She had a college degree in computer programming, and she was applying to be a computer programmer. They acknowledge, okay, yeah, you need a degree, but what they were concerned about was she didn't have enough work experience.
Right.
And I'm amazed, would that happen today? Would they? And she got the job because she had a great excuse. She said, well, the first 3 years of college, she was on the U.S. gymnastics team and did very well. She was part of the United States gymnastics team. And they said, really? Oh, that's enough for us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they were
that's discipline that they were looking
for. Right. But they were looking for her work history from college and was concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Sometimes you just gotta love the New York Post and their headlines. Mm. I wanted to go to the New York Post to see what they had on the assassination of Gambino crime family boss Frank Cali in front of his Staten Island home last night.
All right.
And so I just, you know, I went to their page, and sometimes they have the greatest headlines ever.
Yeah.
Son defends parents caught in college admissions scandal while smoking blunt. Maybe this is why Gregory and Marcia Abbott allegedly bought their daughter's way into college. Their rapper son, Malcolm, popped out of the family's Park Avenue building to smoke a giant blunt while defending his parents and bragging about his latest CD. They're blowing this whole thing out of proportion, said Malcolm Abbott outside of the home that overlooks the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I believe everyone has a right to go to college, man. In between drags, Malcolm, whose father is the founder of a food and beverage distributor, International Dispensing Corporation, admitted, I didn't go to college. The toker, who sports a ponytail and raps under the name of Billa, then shamelessly plugged his music. Check out my CD, he said. At that point, I'm like, I really don't care about this story. The headline was great. The first couple of paragraphs were great. And then you lost me. I don't care.
Yeah.
Now, the parents accused of paying $125,000 to boost their struggling daughter's ACT and SAT scores. Wow. Singer paid off an alleged crooked test proctor to inflate the girl's scores to a perfect 800 on the SAT math exam and 710 on the literature test. On her ACTs, her score of 23 out of 36 was up to a near perfect 35, according to court filings. Both parents were out on $500,000 bail each. Any idea, the authorities at all asked the question by any reporters or answered about William Macy, why he's not charged?
No.
We had asked a question yesterday, and
I saw a legal commentator say that, you know, it comes down to culpability when it comes to any investigation. There are certain actions by anybody during that investigation that you believe you can get them on, and others, you know, you can't. So if they believe that something wasn't going to stick, I don't know why conspiracy, maybe conspiracy isn't a crime worth, maybe no reasonable prosecutor would pursue conspiracy. Because if she moved the money, you know, often it's the case that you have celebrities that are couples and they have separate accounts. My celebrity wife and I have separate accounts. You know, so Felicity Huff, in that case, could have been doing all the, and we don't, I don't know yet.
Right.
Could have been doing all the check writing or money transfers.
It could be as simple as that, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I originally went to the Post to find out any more information they had, and it's still, everybody sort of has the same information that, think about this. First assassination of a crime figure like this in New York since Paul Castellano. Remember that in front of Sparks nightclub back in, was it 85? When Gotti had him hit?
Right.
But Gambino crime boss Francisco Frankie Boy Cali assassinated in front of his Staten Island home Wednesday night. Was gunned down in front of his brick mansion at 9:20 p.m. His wife and children were inside, police sources told the Post. The gunman sped off in a blue pickup truck. They're trying to figure out now whether it was sanctioned by the five families or whether they, as they call it, was a, quote, cowboy, end of quote, hit.
Hmm.
Said Cali was a real quiet, old-school boss. A lot of neighbors had no idea that he was even there. Apparently, that he even lived there. And you ask, because that's one of the questions we asked today, well, with the feds all over them, what are they into now? Heroin and OxyContin. Sources told the Post in September. That's, you know, that's what they were, you know, focused on.
Right. I guess that's where the, you know, demand is. That's where the money is.
It's where the money is. And is it when you look at other ways that the mob used to make money with the technology that the FBI has today, can you really successfully do a lot of other things? I guess gambling you still could.
Yeah.
You could still, you know, right. Do that. I mean, what about being inside the unions today? Is that still a problem that it used to be 30, 40, 50 years ago?
You know, we haven't really seen an in-depth look, and maybe someone's done it and I missed it.
Of the mob. Yeah, you're right. That's a great point.
I don't know the last time one was done. I know they've done them in recent years, but not. I haven't seen one in probably at least 5 or 6 years, if not longer. You know, you had the gang show that was on. What was that on Discovery?
Yeah, you're right. They did have that.
You know, and they had the gang shows, so they would do. Every once in a while, they would do, you know, just kind of look inside the mob. And you've seen a couple of one-off documentaries. But I do wonder what, you know, what the state of organized crime is. Because organized crime now, you look at, there's some level of organized crime all over America, all over the world. Cartels in Mexico, they run that country. You talk about the Taliban. How do they make their money?
Oh, I forgot to tell you. I got one of those Bitcoin ransom emails the other day.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you paid it.
And it actually came to my work email. It got through the spam.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it said, you know, they've got information on me, and if I don't send, it's like, well, whatever it is, go ahead.
Right.
I have no idea what information you have on me, but I don't care.
I sent a $5,000 wire to some new king. I'm celebrating this new king of Nairobi or something. But the thing is that he's a kind person. He's going to return that back tenfold. It's a great investment. I've done well.
Well, but is that worldwide organized crime? I guess that's my point in a way.
I mean,
you send out a million, you're able to get emails and you just send out a million of these things where
all the phone call scams, all the email scams, all that,
right.
Most often is organized. When you get the guys that are fake on the phone, you'll hear often they're in a room with a ton of other callers.
Yeah.
Hey, this is so-and-so from Microsoft. I need you to log on to your computer. When a guy, he called me that one day and said pretty much that. I said, oh, that's okay. I'm an executive from Microsoft. And then he screamed at me a couple of expletives and laughed and hung up the phone. And then there's the IRS thing. You owe us money. You need to wire this money. Send this money. But those, if you think about it, those aren't as sophisticated as some of the others that are going on. I read about one recent scam and the tactics being used. And I'd have to bring it back up again to go through the details, but it was very sophisticated. Very sophisticated. That involved technology a lot more. But we go back to, there was a group of Russians who helped a presidential candidate rig an election. No, there was a group of Russians. Well, actually, we don't know if they were Russians. They were organized in Russia. We assume they were Russians. But they had organized in different parts of the globe. And they targeted this one bank. It wasn't a U.S.-based bank. But they made fake debit cards, knowing that they were going to get caught and that it would be triggered. They did a synchronized usage of a number of cards.
I remember that. Yeah,
these were cards that were duplicated for real accounts, and they did withdrawals on those accounts in a synchronized fashion, all at the same time, different parts of the world. That's extremely organized. So organized crime in general has turned into like a number of things. And who knows what the, you know, the mafia or whatever even they call themselves or anybody else calls them anymore, these families might be into. A lot of it probably pertains to technology, identity theft, and things where other people, other bad guys are successful.
I guess my point is you have to work awfully hard to be a successful criminal these days.
Yeah.
You've got to be wary. There's a ton of risks. But you've also got to work very hard.
Right.
Maybe if you just had that same effort and did it legally,
right,
you probably could make as much money or more.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much the average guy who has made...
makes today.
That would be one thing I would ask in the documentary.
Remember the commitment. 24/7 you're on call.
Well, that's, and you're committed to the family first and your actual family second.
Exactly.
And so you've got the threats from both the illegal enforcement from within and the legal enforcement. I'm sorry, why is that appealing? I mean,
your free time is that probably, you know, with the millennials who wish to become mobsters today, is that a part? Look, I don't want to be tied to this 24/7.
Right.
Well, that's not really a choice.
Right.
You know, when I go home, my time isn't my own time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the complaint. I want to take my kids to the park. Yeah, okay, when you do that, drop this package off here. You know, exactly. It's a very complicated situation. But that's, I think it's fascinating to look into that part of society. You know, whether it's a motorcycle club or or the cartels or the mafia. I mean, the Taliban, they make their money from heroin. That's organized crime. They use that money for other things, but it's organized crime. You could probably do a documentary series if you could get the access. If you could get that kind of access.
Well, I wonder, because of the assassination of the Gambino crime family boss last night, whether there will be more documentaries that will come out. What is the modern mob today?
Right. Well, you know, I think of Graham Wood, the writer. Who probably over the years is just as knowledgeable as anybody about Al-Qaeda, Taliban, ISIS terrorism. And he was able to get access that others couldn't get. you know, as a journalist. And it's fascinating. I wonder if, you know, because that would be the roadblock there and getting that access to any given organization.
Right. Well, I'd just like to know what law enforcement has to say about the modern mob.
Yeah, right.
You know, how powerful are they? What are they into? What can't they get into that they were into 30, 40 years ago?
Right.
I mean, is there still protection done for businesses? Is that still done today? Or is that something that you can't do because of the... everybody's got a camera and you could easily be identified and at that point...
Yeah. Brian telling us there's a mob museum in Las Vegas. Of course, the ties to Las Vegas, you know, go back a long, long time. I don't know what they would... But I don't know that you're going to get... That's more of kind of a pop culture touristy kind of thing.
Right.
More of a Hollywood kind of appeal where they build, you know, you build this kind of almost a glamorous portrayal of those people, which I also have never understood. You know, Donnie Brasco is one of those movies you watch and I can watch it over and over again. And I know people who were undercover in their job in the past, and they have told me there's zero glamour and your heart is racing all the time. You're always extremely aware, but always, always that fear is with you every single second. I can't imagine.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing, medical and recreational uses. More and more states continue to legalize marijuana, both for medicinal and recreational use. Canada also legalized the drug late last year. But if you are driving through or live in one of the places where it's legal and decide it would be okay to consume marijuana, you would be wrong. Since marijuana use remains illegal under federal law in the U.S. and the trucking industry is federally regulated, drivers are not allowed to use it for recreational or medicinal purposes, and the Americans with Disabilities Act does not require employers to accommodate an employee's use of marijuana. While the laws might differ from state to state, the policy for drivers is clear. Marijuana use violates the DOT drug and alcohol policy no matter where you are driving. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Let's go to Dustin in Decatur on the college admissions scam. Dustin, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thanks.
Hey, I guess I had a question that we may not know the answer to, but regardless of the answer, the lack of intelligence or lack of reality is hilarious. And the question is, if this started back in 2011, I think is what they were saying.
Right.
Did the kids who got in, did they graduate? Because if they got in and graduated, well, or didn't graduate, if they didn't graduate, then that says, okay, they were never going to get it through this college in the first place. They spent all this money and it was a hurdle they were never gonna get through, because the idea is to graduate
unless they cheated right. After so they got in as well. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. But if their parents said, well, we got you in, now go do it, and they didn't graduate, their parents should have seen long ago, well, Junior is not that smart because he couldn't get in the first place without a boost, so he's not going to survive. The other side of it is they got in there, bought their way in, and then graduated, which says, okay, these schools that are supposedly prestigious are completely overrated. Once you get past the first hurdle of getting into these high academic standards, okay, these high test scores, you can actually get through there. So any idiot could actually go to your school and do it.
I've had discussions with people that have gone to college in recent years and are conservative, and they're going to liberal schools, and they tell me, as long as I shake my head yes in class, my professor will pass me. And clearly, absolutely, there's an agenda going on. They know with their professor, and not all professors, but they say if there is that professor, you know, and it was in one case business. It was a business class. And this person just said, nope, I just stay silent and shake my head yes and agree. And they get through. They realize if they put up a challenge, other students tried to do that. Not advised.
Unless these celebrities just want their children to become really good socialists.
Yes, or actors.
If you don't like what they're saying, then you can't handle the truth. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently, is Freightliner's number one goal. Don't forget, we podcast. If you miss a show or part of a show, go to redeyeradioshow.com. You can also catch the Extra Mile podcast. I sit down with my friends from the trucking industry, and we talk about a number of things. There's some great stuff coming up. We're going to tackle some ELD conversations, also other regulatory items, hours of service, and more. RedEyeRadioShow.com. And don't forget, coming up later this month, it is the last weekend of the month, the Mid-America Trucking Show in Louisville, Kentucky. I will be out there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and so we want you out there. My friends from Howe's Lubricator are going to be there as well. In fact, they're unveiling some really great stuff, some brand new look, and some really great prizes being given away at their booth, 14136, booth number 14136 in Louisville at the Mid-America Show. We will see you there coming up in, 2 weeks from today. 2 weeks from today, the Mid-America Trucking Show at the Kentucky Fair and Expo Center in Louisville, Kentucky. And Howe's Lubricator, we're going to be doing some Facebook Live sessions with them and having some fun. They've got stuff to give away, and that's always fun. We'll see you there.
Are you ready for this?
No.
Is this the beginning of Chris Matthews, I've Got a Tingle 2.0?
That's exactly what I was thinking when we were previewing that. You were playing it earlier, and I was thinking, here we go.
You ready for this?
I don't know.
Because Skater Bob, as far as you know, supposed to announce that he's running for president today.
Right.
Here's Chris Matthews on that last night.
All right.
Plus, Beto O'Rourke makes his move tomorrow. It looks like it's going to happen. The former congressman appears to be jumping into the presidential race. Can he turn his Texas Beto mania into a national movement? Where do you see the cover of Vanity Fair coming up? What a kiss. All signs are now pointing towards former Texas congressman Beto O'Rourke to enter the 2020 presidential race tomorrow. That's Thursday this week. Tomorrow, a reporter for the Texas Tribune tweeted, Beto's team is emailing volunteers from his Senate campaign. We need help sending some text messages tomorrow morning. O'Rourke is headed to Iowa tomorrow for a multi-day trip in the first caucus state. And tonight, Vanity Fair posted a new profile of O'Rourke. He told the magazine, quote, you can probably tell that I want to run. Do I think I'll be good? I think I'll be good at it. By the way, bring back that cover a bit. That cover is the best kiss I've seen for a candidate in a long time. I always say the candidate wins who's got the sun in his face, who looks like sunny, optimistic, not the indoor bureaucrat sitting at some desk somewhere.
Here we go.
Yeah. What was the quote from Vanity Fair? I was born to do this.
Yeah. I was born to be in it.
I was born to be in it. That's right. I was born to be. I don't know why, but I just kept thinking, I just don't know how to quit you.
Yeah.
I don't know why that just popped into my mind.
I think he was born to step in it. According to the Washington Post.
If you've seen the Vanity Fair article, I mean, it's just, and I read it yesterday, it's just, it is hilarious.
Yeah.
I will say this. If you read it, you're like, oh, so this is the second coming. Mm-hmm. Is this what this is? Okay.
Right. Well, I mean,
it's just
here's what's interesting. I thought the Kamala Harris thing would gain more steam, and maybe it will later. But I thought it would gain more momentum than it has. It really hasn't. You know what's interesting, too, is that they are focusing on the Democrats, clearly the media, Ocasio-Cortez, and you know Kamala Harris in the week or two after she announced. And Beto will be next. Bernie, he's kind of a constant. But they can't move away from Trump. Remember what the former editor of the New York Times wrote? She said, they're doing this for money. When they write about Trump, the subscription level goes up.
Right. Right.
So they can't move away from Trump. Now we go back. Now let's go back to 2016. And what did they do on the numbers? He did like $2 billion in free advertisement because everybody wanted to focus on him so mm-hmm. much and had him on TV.
Yes.
And wrote about him. And that wasn't all positive. The point being is they're not going to be able to look away from Trump. They can't do that. Now, they'll give Kamala Harris, they'll give Beto, they'll give, you know, their candidates their time, and certainly that's going to ramp up as we get into, get closer to 2020 and start getting into debate season. But they still won't be able to get away from Trump. You know, that's different than Barack Obama. Barack Obama in his final years, and I know there would be a difference, obviously, in the final year of your second term. The media kind of looks away. But in this case, there is so much. They are micromanaging everything that's the only term I can come up with. But it's like micromanagement of this administration at every single level. His mentions are always going to tower over theirs. And I wonder what that does. I really wonder how that affects the psyche of the American voter.
All right, so here we go. This is Tuesday, and this is the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination morning consult nationwide. Hmm. And if you want to look at all the different polls that have been done so far, Biden and Sanders are way out front.
Right.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. Biden and Sanders are way out front. Biden hasn't officially announced yet. So this is Tuesday. Biden 31, Sanders 27. So you're looking at that, and you are already at what? You're at 58% right there of Democrats. Hmm. Harris has 10. Warren, 7. O'Rourke, 7.
Right.
Booker, 4. Klobuchar, 3. Hickenlooper, 1. Julian Castro, and probably to a great disappointment of a friend of mine down in San Antonio who's just a huge Castro fan. I'm joking there. Gabbard 1, Gillibrand 1, Inslee 1. That's it. And, well, I'm looking at the Michigan primary. Biden 28, Sanders 25, Harris 10, Warren 8, Booker 5, O'Rourke 6. So, and you look at Inslee 0. So, I mean, the vast majority is still, when you look at it, it's still Biden, Sanders, and then Harris and everybody else. Nobody is above double figures except those three.
And Harris is a distant third.
Very distant third. Again, so, everything can change. Everything can change over a period of months. But it's when you look at it overall, I think it's important to understand that we're being, you know, you can see the interest, and you and I go back to the CNN focus group last week, where the CNN focus group, they were all Hillary supporters,
right.
And they all say now, no Hillary, no Biden, no Sanders. And who do they love the most? Ocasio-Cortez. Right. She's extremely intelligent. She's exactly what we need. By the way, if you want to see the definition of brainwashing, go and watch that CNN segment. We played parts of it last week. So when you look at it, the majority of Democrats still want the far left. The majority of Democrats still want the candidates, and don't pay attention to this whole O'Rourke thing of, well, I'm trying to look. He's a socialist. Right. He's as far left as you can possibly get. He's going to try to portray himself as, you know, as Warren is, as somebody who is a moderate. Is there one moderate left? What do we come to the conclusion? One or two moderates left?
Yeah.
In Congress.
Maybe
on
a total
on the Democrat side.
Yeah, maybe a total. Right. Maybe a total of two.
So, but you still have, when it comes to the far left, it's Bernie Sanders that has a dominant lead of 27%. Biden, 31%. So who is that 31%? But even when it comes to the far left, they don't want, they're very split as to who they want to represent them as president from the far left, except Bernie Sanders is the clear leader there.
Right.
So it's the old guy. It's not the new, young, fresh blood.
Yeah.
As of yet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when O'Rourke announces, what will his numbers be a week from now? After what will be unbelievably syrupy
adoration,
Chris Matthews tingling, going back up his leg. I expect Chris Matthews to say, I have not been this excited and haven't felt this tingle since the Obama days. I bet you hear something relating to that. He may not use the tingle word, but you get it out of what he just said last night.
Here's my question, too. I saw Biden in an interview recently, right? He seemed okay. He seemed, it was CBS. He seemed fine. Seemed like Biden. But let's just say that aging and him not being really at the, you know, out there, you know, in on an everyday basis, hasn't slowed him down, right?
Mm-hmm.
CBS asked him that question about his age. I said, it's a fair question, but everything's fine. I'm energetic. I'm excited, more excited maybe, and that kind of thing. Well, let's just say in their minds, the people that the respondents to these polls that are putting him on top, you know, you always remember the old band you used to follow based on the fact that you listened to their CD that they recorded in 1978. And they put that album together, and now you've got it on a CD. For those under the age of 60, a CD was. So you're listening to their work that they recorded ages ago. And you're thinking, oh, man, they're going to go and do one last tour. I'm going to go see them. And you get out there, and you kind of go, woo. But in the back of your mind, you're going, yeah, it's probably time for them to retire. The point being is that he's not really that rock star, but does he even have that? Does even if his appeal of what it was is still there, does that resonate enough? Because things will change. Like you said, with these polls will change. Kamala Harris comes out and she announces she wants to do this. She'll announce her agenda. Beto, he'll promote something, you know. We go back to Herman Cain and the 999 plan or whatever. You know, you throw it out there and you hope it sticks and people are talking about it. And then that gives you a boost in the polls. Can Biden do that and actually promote something that is forward moving? Because I think there's something to these respondents saying Biden, but thinking of the Biden of yesterday and not having listened to his ideas for the future. I think that has to be considered, and I wonder if he stays on top of the polls.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. When you get down to it, though, when you look at this time, you know, next year, when we have had, what, maybe one or two primaries? No, I'm sorry, we're in March already. I keep thinking we're in February. when we're already well into the primary season and you've had a number of them drop out, the problem that Biden has is I think he has a strong 31% there, and I do think there's a lot of people that think he should be the guy that they believe that he is most likely the one. I think Democrats believe this. It can beat Trump.
Right.
But the problem is you've got this whole left wing that is more popular than ever before, and I think it's growing inside the Democrat Party. We need to get rid of the old folks, and we need the new folks to be there.
Right.
I think with Nancy coming out and stating that she doesn't want to impeach Trump, that there's nothing there to impeach Trump, has infuriated the left wing of the Democrat Party. And I do think that they will coalesce together, or there's a great possibility they will coalesce together and have one of the young radicals as their candidate of choice. Whether it works or not, I don't know. But I believe that's where the fight's going inside the Democrat Party.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. You know, we were talking about Skater Bob, Beto O'Rourke, to announce that he's running for president today. And you and I had looked at an interview that he did a couple of weeks ago where we just said, come on, stop it. If you're going to run for president, you've got to stand for something.
Right.
And this is where he was out there stating, well, it really doesn't matter what I think. It matters what Americans think. And I'm going to go on and I'm going to find out what Americans are thinking out there and what Americans wish me to do. And we're like, stop it. This isn't, and I go back to our day in high school. This isn't back in high school when you elected the senior president who said, okay, what do the students actually care about? Oh, they want a smoking lounge. Is that what they're talking about now in high schools? Is it we want a vaping lounge?
Mm-hmm.
Can we have a vaping lounge? Mm-hmm. We need to have a vaping lounge here. If you're running for president of the United States, you ought to stand for something. And you and I criticized him for that. It was interesting because the senior writer for Slate.com, Josh Voorhees, almost saying the exact same thing that we have said. Beto 2020 has no reason to exist. Of all the major candidates, he brings the least to the Democratic primary. And he goes in to talk about, you know, the fact that O'Rourke has a lot of funding. He's got a lot of support. He's got an infrastructure set up. He goes, Beto was missing one important thing, though. An actual reason to run.
Right.
O'Rourke would enter the race as a man without a clear political ideology. Remember, this is from Slate.
Right.
This is not a conservative publication at all. He would enter the race as a man without a clear political ideology, a signature legislative achievement, a major policy issue, or a concrete agenda for the country. He has none of those. Those in the know tell The Atlantic that Beto is planning to run as a candidate, quote, offering hope that America can be better than its current partisan and hate-filled politics, and that the country can come together, but that, brace yourself, he hasn't yet landed on how he'll propose to actually make that happen. That's more of the same empty words Beto's been offering in public since his loss to Cruz. I don't know where I am on the political spectrum, and I almost could care less, he said at a recent stop in Wisconsin. I just want to get to better things for this country. Beto 2020, better things. Would not be the worst campaign slogan I've ever heard, but it's nowhere near a fully formed version or vision of why O'Rourke thinks he should be president or why Democrats of any stripe should want him to be.
Right.
It's possible that he'll be able to ride to the nomination on the force of his personality alone. It's gotten him this far, but that would be a particular shame considering he'll face one of the deepest and most diverse primary fields. If Democrats are in the market for soaring rhetoric about bridging the partisan divide, they can get that from Joe Biden or Cory Booker, all of whom can offer you their own specific cases for what that bipartisanship can produce, unlike O'Rourke. If Beto has a defining characteristic, it's that he easily is excited by possible solutions, but frustratingly slow to choose which one is best. Knowing what you don't know is an admirable quality, but it has its limits. If O'Rourke is going to seek the highest office in the land, he should have some answers of his own. This is coming from the left. He has answers for nothing, is what Slate.com is saying. They're on the left, not the right, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, by the way, how much this whole bipartisan bring people together thing even resonates anymore.
Right now? I don't think it does.
I don't think it works. Because when you had hope and change from the very now conservative Obama, that really was about a blank canvas. That was something that was nothing. And what I'm wondering is if the Slate.coms and the Washington Post of the world say to themselves, yeah, we had that guy already. Keep in mind, they're the ones that have so far called Beto out on his nothingness. When you run for office, you should be, I think in today's world, you're going to have to be very specific. Say what you will about Ocasio-Cortez. I know she's not running for president yet. But she's out there, and she's wrong, but she's telling you what she wants done.
Well,
she's an activist, and I don't know if you motivate anyone with the big nothingness.
Well, let me ask you this question. Is O'Rourke the anti-Ocasio-Cortez? Ocasio-Cortez is completely and totally ignorant. She is completely and totally clueless, but she pretends that she has all the answers when everybody knows that every time she speaks, she shows her cluelessness. O'Rourke is completely clueless. He has no idea what to do, but he admits it. And therefore, that makes him a candidate and a better candidate for president of the United States. I know, I just said that, but Ocasio-Cortez is completely clueless and ignorant, but she proposes all of these things and is confident and has an arrogance and an extreme confidence in the foolish and impossible and unreasonable and radical things that she says. O'Rourke is just the opposite. He tells you, no, I'm completely ignorant and clueless. I don't know what to do. Vote for me because I'm willing to listen. He's the anti-Ocasio-Cortez. I know I'm clueless. I don't know what to do. But I'll listen to you, and I'm admitting I don't know what to do, but I'm willing to listen, and you should elect me as president of the United States. By the way, that's what the Slate.com article is implying.
Right.
And they go through when he's the same interview that he did with the Washington Post that you and I chuckled at a few weeks back when he was asked what should be done to cut down the number of immigrants who overstay their visas. He said, I don't know. Before eventually suggesting that the United States and Mexico could potentially harmonize their visa systems to better track who has entered the country and who has left. That's an answer, he concluded, but that's something that we should be debating. A month or so later, Beto included that same idea in his list of 10 ideas for immigration and border reform he sent to his supporters, but as the title made clear, he was still thinking out loud. A first step, he said, could be text message reminders to those overstaying their visas.
When you look at the appeal of the far left, I think they're drawn to the clueless before they are the people who just put their hands up and shrug and go, I don't know, you tell me.
So the clueless with ideas, you think, is more inviting to Democrats.
For the far left.
For the far left.
For those like Ocasio-Cortez, right. Of course. Because I also think that it is, if we were to find out, if the president were to declassify that information or make public, release the information that he sent to the Inspector General's office, and we found out that the former administration, people at top levels at the FBI, Justice Department, and even CIA, Gary, were using bogus information in petitioning for secret warrants to spy on members of the opposition campaign. I think if that all came down tomorrow, you'd still have a significant number of Americans going, yeah, but, you know, the point was they were trying to get him out. And if they believed that was going to work, I don't have a problem with them doing that. Because they don't care about the process. When they listen to Ocasio-Cortez and they applaud, they don't care about the details. They don't care about it being wrong. What do they care about? The effort to beat Trump. The effort to beat Republicans. It's not going to end with Trump. If Trump loses next year, it's not over. This craziness will ramp up, if anything. One way or the other, it's going to ramp up. If he wins, it's going to put on your sunglasses because it's going to get really bright in here. If he loses, they're going to feel empowered that this kind of idiotic behavior is working for them. The point being is that if Americans don't care about the process anymore, then I don't think they care about any of the details anymore unless you're one of those guys not throwing something. The problem with Beto is he doesn't have the energy. The energy in Texas came from beat Ted Cruz. That energy, what drew the money was Ted Cruz, not Beto O'Rourke. It was something where we have to win. Quick, name the Democrat who lost in Georgia 6.
I also think that, and I think Slate has a great point, that you have to, as they said, he doesn't even stand for generality right now.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about specifics. Generally, he's just stating, well, I really don't want to get involved in it. Well, are you progressive? I really don't want to talk about those terms. I want to talk about what's best for America. That loses itself very, very quickly when you have a ton of other candidates saying, we hate Trump and we want to give you stuff.
This is where Biden has the advantage. He doesn't have to, because right now the media is asking the newcomers to position yourself.
Yeah, he doesn't have to. He's already positioned.
Biden is a former vice president, former long-term senator. Does not have to do that.
Ah, will Omar?
He's Joe.
Will Omar come out and say that he worked for the murderous administration of Obama?
Right. Well, we asked that the other night. If she's willing to say that about Obama, she has to be willing to say that about
Biden.
Number two. I mean, who did number two work for?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Keith in New York City. Keith, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Morning.
Good morning.
I know that the Speaker of the House, our good friend Nancy, caved in. I'm still thinking that the whole thing's overstated as far as the far left wing, the Justice Democrats, I think they call themselves, how much of the Democrat Party they really control. I mean, maybe they will one day. The Justice Democrats, they supported 79 candidates. 7 out of 79 won their seats. I think 4 of them are pretty well known. We have AOC and Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley. The other 3 are pretty anonymous. The most Republican district they won in is D plus 13. They won in between D plus 13, D plus 34. Meaning they didn't win in anything even resembling a swing district. 3 out of the 4, everyone besides AOC, won the most liberal district in the state. Rashida Tlaib, she replaced John Conyers. Ilhan Omar, she replaced Keith Ellison. Ayanna.
Okay, we understand where you're going with it. You're talking the voter. When we talk about it, we're talking about where the party is going.
And they,
I'm saying
yeah.
that.
Right,
I think the media is overstating the case.
Keith,
we're not talking about, when we talk about the power of the left, we're not talking about the voter in America, we're talking about where the party is going.
Mm-hmm.
Now they may hurt because of it down the line, but the party definitely is moving far left, and remember, how close did Bernie Sanders come to defeating Hillary Clinton?
I understand that. But within my only point is I think that obviously among Americans, they're in the minority. I think even within the Democrat Party, I think it's overstated.
Well, okay, fair enough. But here's the thing, Keith. What the difference is post-election and now that these people are seated and in power. They have been, at least when you look at Omar and Ocasio-Cortez, they've both been empowered in different ways, but certainly empowered. The point being is that when you are that loud and you're getting that much media attention, especially when you have a cause, you dare the others not to get on board for your cause, Green New Deal or whatever it might be. And then you start building the consensus with the voter. You start building that consensus with people out there because they're seeing you so often. There are plenty of people out there that agree with all of them on different issues, on any given issue. But the fact of the matter is this. Now that they're in power, there's a great deal of influence. We can say, you know, okay, it was a fluke, Ocasio-Cortez. She won the election with very little money because she went viral. She went viral for a reason. She didn't go viral for a reason like when Jesse Ventura ran for and won as governor. It was a very different kind of situation. With her, it was about her causes. It was about the fact that she is an activist. They're having to build consensus along the way in order to get a bigger backing. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but right now it's happening.
Yeah, and we've never said the majority of the American public support them. We're talking about their power inside the party, and you said you don't believe their power is that great. Excuse me? The Democrats could not, as they would have at any Congress before, call out a member for absolutely anti-Semitic remarks.
Mm-hmm.
the Democrats refused to hold a vote on infanticide. The Democrat Party supports sanctuary cities. The Democrat Party official position is, and by the way, it was said by Nancy Pelosi, a wall is immoral. Every single presidential candidate, well, up until maybe a week ago, I don't know, a couple of them haven't stated, but up until a week ago, supported the Green New Deal. The far left has a much greater hold, whether it is 51% or 49% or 60% or 49%, may be up for debate. But the fact is, they are leading the narrative of the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm.
It may destroy their party with the voter because of it. We're just talking about the strength within the party right now, and it is clearly there.
It could cost them the election next year. We don't know that yet.
Right. Yes.
But it is certainly, for now, it is building. Here's your forecast.
There are reports of more than 1,000 drivers stranded in Colorado Springs, that area of the Front Range in Colorado. Governor Polis declares a state of emergency as the bomb cyclone, or very low pressure area, has paralyzed the region. Yesterday afternoon, the winds were gusty from Texas into Colorado. There was a 97-mile-an-hour wind gust recorded at the Colorado Springs Airport. 6 to 10 inches for northern El Paso County. 80-mile-an-hour winds at the Denver International Airport, which closed all its runways yesterday afternoon. Many interstates in the region are closed or impassable at this hour. So if you're traveling I-70 in Colorado, I-25 from Colorado up through Wyoming into Montana, you're going to want to check ahead for local conditions. Widespread power outages in the region, too. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Cheat on their SATs because they never took them. Gary and Eric on Red Eye Radio.
I did.
I do remember, I can still remember sitting in the classroom the day that I had to take the SAT. Mm-hmm. Now, do they still had, we had the, there was the PSAT and the SAT. You took a,
right.
You took a, did
the
you
pre,
take?
Pre-SAT.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we took.
That was earlier.
Right. And I then, remember taking the SAT. I cannot remember what I got on it. I have no idea. But I remember.
I think I got a perfect 100.
Well, that's.
Score!
That's the influence of your parents and the family of money that you came from.
Yes. yeah, I got the perfect $100 bill.
I remember sitting in class because it was told to us so many times that the SAT will determine your future. And I remember thinking of that at the moment, that the SAT is going to determine my future.
Right. No.
And it was before they actually handed it out to us, but I remember sitting in class when that happened and thinking, uh-oh, this determines... They say this will determine my future. I don't know if I actually bought into it, because in high school, I really didn't buy into anything.
No.
One of the good things about me is I believe I've always been a cynic. Whenever anybody told me what my life was going to be or what I would end up being, I really didn't pay much attention to them. By the way, that attitude did come in healthy as a talk show host later on in life. Not really caring what other people said. And
finally, it's working for you. Finally. Yeah.
Your antisocial attitude, Gary, is going to pay off in the end.
Look, it's finally going to mean something. But the math still will not. I didn't look at it as anything, any, I guess, one thing determining my future. I always looked at it as I'm going to determine it. I'm either going to be a complete loser. Well, that seemed to work out. And, or I'm going to, you know, go out and try. And it would, I guess to me, there was no difference in working hard to achieve in a higher education and working hard at a job. I didn't want to do either. No, I mean, I guess from the background, my dad got his master's degree late in life. He was in his late 30s. But it was, for me, I always knew just, and I don't know if I could have expressed it then and told you then, you know, during my senior year in high school when I was 28, that I got that influence from my dad. But it was about showing up every day and working hard and doing your best every day. And my dad was, set that example. That was the greatest, in terms of work ethic, example my dad ever gave me, and he did it by example. And I always looked at it as, it doesn't matter what it is, I'm going to have to put in a full effort. And this one score could be, you know, if they said that to me, and they may have, I don't know, I don't remember. But if they had said that to me, I'm sure back then I would have said, yeah, but I could ace this thing and then not be a great student. I could, you know, or maybe I don't ace it and then I learn to become a great student. There were events in my life that changed my mentality about how I was going to attack any given task.
The school said that more than my parents. My parents, or my dad when I was 14, is the one who told me, you need to be good in the new economy. So this goes back into the 70s.
Yeah, I don't remember my parents saying anything about the SAT.
Neither do I. No. I mean, they said you need to do good in it. You need to do good in everything that you do. But when my dad told me a few things, my parents told me a few things. The one when I remember I was 14 years of age, and my dad told me you better be good at three or four different things, preferably four different things, because the new economy is going to be different, and you need to be able to do a variety of different things. So that's when he was working on his car, and he wanted me to learn how to work on a car. He wanted me to go up to my grandfather's machine shop. At the same time, he wanted us to have a college education. And the other thing my dad said is, I remember when I came back from junior high school and we had to go to the counselors, and the counselor said, well, you aren't college material. You're going to end up in the trade somewhere as a construction worker. That's probably that, from what we can see, that's where your destiny is. I remember telling that to my parents and they just laughed. I'm like, what? They said, yeah, they have no idea what you're going to be, and neither do you, and neither do we. You can do with your mind probably, and you know, we always hear that you can do whatever you want in life. Well, you really can. I mean, physically, I could never have played in the NBA, but mind wise you can. And as I tell a lot of young people today, I said, and because it comes right from my dad, you have no idea what you're going to like, because what you're going to find out is the thing that you might want to do at 18. Now, I'm lucky, since I was a kid, I wanted to be on the radio. But I did a bunch of things before I ended up back into radio. And if I would have stayed in those things, and I would have moved up the management chain, I would have been happy. There wouldn't have been, because what I found out in life is, it doesn't matter what your dream is. It's good to have a dream, and if you get to do your dream, it's great. But what you find out, the true dream is when you get to have, I think for a lot of people, and people maybe with my personality type and your personality type, it's if you get to move up in any business and you have power and control and someone trusts you with that power and control and it works out and you find out that your ideas and your management style and your ideas actually work to make more money and to become more productive and to move forward and see that you're productive and you make other people productive, that's what I really think most people find out when they get to be in their 40s, 50s, and even in their 60s. They look back and they say, yeah, that's what I ended up doing, something that I never wanted to do. Now, I ended up in radio, but I never wanted to do talk radio ever, ever. This is the last part of radio I ever wanted to do. I wanted to have fun.
And this isn't fun at all.
I wanted to do the rock radio kind of thing. Now, this is the most fun ever.
It is.
Because it combines everything.
Oh, that's what I meant.
You and I have talked about this. It combines everything that we love doing.
You and I have, we actually have talked about this off the air in recent days about how we have an opportunity on this program, because management isn't aware that we exist.
Yes.
We can say things, but honestly, because we have 5 hours, we get the opportunity to expand on ideas. And we also have a core belief that we think if you're going to be up at this time of night, it's you're either working, you've got insomniac, and there are a lot of serious topics that we cover. We would like to have some fun because they can take my money for taxes, but they're not going to steal my joy.
No.
And we should be able to laugh at things that are going on. Some things don't warrant laughter, clearly, but we like to have some fun.
Well, one of the things about doing this show and at the time that we do this show and the length of the show is we get to expand on topics that we would never get the opportunity to do if we were doing a day show. We've often talked about that.
Yeah.
Because we could get there if we wanted. The offers have been out there.
Mm-hmm.
We do this because we choose to do it, because there are some great things that we're able to do. The freedom and creativity that we get to do at this time and because of the length of the show, for me, does not exist anywhere in the media. Maybe in a blog. Or excuse me, maybe in a podcast. But it doesn't pay with this pace.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you're right. We've had opportunities to go on to daytime radio. I mean, clearly, we're smarter than Ben Shapiro and people like that. So. Everybody knows that. Hello. I mean, anybody can be viral and successfully debate professors and such. Come on.
He does a great job.
He
really does. I've said this before.
I've never seen that kind of... Here's what I'm starting to think. I'm starting to think Shapiro's a robot. He's artificial intelligence. I mean, he doesn't miss a beat.
You're saying that in a complimentary way, by the way.
Tell me, anybody else that you've seen that, in terms of issuing a response... He's not reading things.
No.
We don't read things unless we're actually covering a story and we read from an article that we, you know, and we tell you how they write it and we're reading.
Right.
But I mean, in terms of response and debate, we don't do that. But I'm talking about, I've never seen him flinch. Robots also don't flinch.
I've made my case. He's got to be in his mid 30s now, but a couple of years ago when he was in, you know, his younger 30s, I said, I've never seen a mind that is that astute, that young on conservative principles.
Well, I keep wondering, oh my gosh, what was his upbringing like? You know, they're doing the Young Sheldon series, or Little Sheldon, whatever it's called. You know, someone needs to do Ben.
He's the real life Sheldon.
Well, I mean,
in politics.
Well, I'd like to do the Young Ben series, documentary style. Of course, you have to do, you know, some bright young kid. Who would you find to play him? But I mean, the point being is that he does not go without issuing a response. And he's not a troll. He's very smart and thoughtful in those responses.
Even when he is trolling online.
Yes. Now he can troll.
Well, the point that we're trying to get to is in education, in everything that you do. I mean, my dad had told me way, way back then, you got to be good at two or three different things, possibly four different things, because the economy's changing. You need to be good at a trade and college. My dad wasn't trade school or college. He was trade and college. You need both. in order to survive and give yourself that security, that's where you're going to get it. And so college, trade, and a couple of other things, and learn how to sell things. You got to learn how to sell things. You got to know how things are made. You've got to be good at engineering. You've got to have a trade, and you've got to have a college degree. That's what my dad was throwing at me. So when someone would come up and say to me, your SAT or getting into this particular college is your key to success, that really didn't have much of a bearing on me. So my parents, I knew we had to go to college, knew they didn't have money to send us to a great college, knew I would have to work to pay for my own college, but you did it. I will say the one thing that's different, when I was 18 or when I was 17 years of age and looking to go into college, I really didn't know. I mean, there were things and dreams that I liked doing. I was always enamored, again, with radio and wanted to do that. But I really didn't know. And I just went to work, and I enjoyed everything that I did, whether it was my first job cleaning toilets, to working at the bank during college, to working as a club DJ at the same time that I was working at the bank and going to college full time. And as I've said, my college experience, the best thing I got out of college was not the degree. It was time management. It was learning how to organize my time to get everything that I needed to get done during the day. That's the greatest thing. So when these parents look at it and the symbolism and imagery of the degree at a great college is everything, I believe they're doing a major disservice to their children to begin with, just with that idea, even if there's no cheating involved, that one thing is the pinnacle of your life or the pinnacle of what you have. I would disagree with that from the very start.
Yeah.
So,
I remember my dad one day opening the door. I was probably a sophomore in high school, opening the front door and saying, all that is yours. I don't have any money to give you. You're going to have to go out and grab it yourself. Go earn. Go earn every day. Show up. And if they ask you to do something, say yes.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. So I guess, and I saw this from NBC News, Lori Loughlin's case resurfaces Full House school admissions scheme episode.
Hmm.
That on Full House, they had an episode where Loughlin and John Stamos' characters take matters into their hands when they realize their twin boys won't be admitted into a prestigious preschool.
Hmm. Life imitating art.
And apparently she posted a $1 million bond yesterday,
too. Yeah, remember, the Loughlin case was about $500,000, not
$15,000.
Yeah. But still, with Felicity Huffman, it was a pretty big bail.
It's going to be interesting to see where this case goes.
I don't think any of them are going to jail. I really don't. I think there may be a strong or long probation period. I'd be surprised if any of them go to jail.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.